Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're broadcasting from this week from the Men Are From GM, Women Are From Ford division here at Car Talk Plaza.
This says it all, I think.
It's only 27 paragraphs. Pretty good.
It's actually quite brief. Roughly 3 years ago, my girlfriend climbed into her car, a 1986 VW Golf, to leave for work. Just before she shut the door, she said, "I love you."
Mm-hmm.
It was the first time she had ever said it to me. I paused, glanced at the steely gray sky to savor the moment, then redirected my gaze at her car to say what any true romantic would say, given the same circumstances.
"You're leaking oil."
Quote, "You're so close." "I should really fix these rust spots."
Ah.
Tears welled up in her eyes. The moment was more than she could bear. She turned the key in the ignition and sped off to her workplace. Not much later that day, I received a phone call from the very same girlfriend. Rather than greeting me with an enthusiastic, "Hello, my love," mm-hmm. as I felt I had every right to expect, she was downright bitter. Ooh. According to her, my response to her confession of love was callous and insufficient. My viewpoint was somewhat different. In fact, I argued, by promising to fix the rust spots on her car, I had gone beyond telling her that I love her.
You transcended love.
I was actually extending the intention to demonstrate it in a most tangible way.
Yeah.
She didn't buy it.
No, I didn't think so.
3 years later, she still tells the same story to everyone willing to listen. The message finally got through to Nellie, my girlfriend, that the promise of rust repair equals love. We are to be married. She still drives the 86 Golf. And by God, I really should fix this rust spot. Now, see, people say that men aren't warm.
Yeah. But no, I think he's right. I mean, he did go beyond.
It went beyond.
He could have merely said, "I love you too." But I mean, it's understood.
It's uncreative.
Exactly.
"I really should fix those rust spots." It's like giving your wife a shop vac for her birthday, as we have done.
It says it all.
Yeah,
Did you give her the wet dry?
She doesn't speak to me anymore. I gave her the wet dry.
Yeah, me too. I was worried about being strangled by that hose. It looked rather substantial to me.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt too much, though. She whacks me with it every once in a while.
If you'd like to talk to us about your car or your shop vac or your love, our number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Kathy.
Hi, Kathy. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Richmond, line 5. And my girls have never heard of y'all.
Richmond, line 5.
Richmond, Virginia.
Yeah, got it.
Got it?
Got it.
You got it.
What's...
So you're obviously at work.
Obviously.
You're trying to direct traffic and talk to us at the same
time. And I'm the boss.
Oh.
Well, if you're the boss, then they'll figure out what to do.
So what's up, Kathy?
You have to delegate responsibility. You can't be a good boss unless you can disappear for a couple of weeks at a time.
There you go.
So what's going on?
All right. I have an 86 Saab.
Yes.
150,000 miles.
A 900 or a 9,000?
It's a Kmart special. It's the 900.
900. Yeah. Okay.
I have an oil leak in the front engine.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had it for 6 years.
the car or the leak?
And you just got around to calling us? Has the line been busy all that time?
And, yeah.
Patty called you.
I'm on the other line.
Hey, come on. Hey, we're on a tight schedule here.
Man.
Patty, who
this
cares
really
about Patty?
This is really good, isn't it? I hope my husband doesn't find out all these calls I'm on. I'm sorry.
That's quite all right.
All right, so...
For 6 years, you've had an oil leak in the front engine. How about the rear engine?
No. I just have a front engine in this one.
Well, the front of the engine is towards the back of the car. Do you know that?
No.
This engine's in backwards. Number one cylinder is closest to the firewall.
Well, the oil leak is toward the front of the car, though.
That's what they say.
That's what they say.
Okay, so that's the rear seal.
It's actually the rear of the engine.
Oh.
But that's all right.
And so now they're suggesting that you fix it?
Well, they always suggest I fix it. It's $800 to pull the engine.
Right.
And they don't even know if they can fix it.
No, and if they do pull the engine, they're going to find $800 of additional leaks and problems.
Right.
I'd leave it alone.
Yeah. You've done the right thing by disregarding everything they tell you.
Well, my point is if the car runs.
Yeah. Yeah. You've been putting oil in to replace the leaking oil?
I have. I'm very good at every 3,000 miles, 2,000 to 3,000 miles, I have the oil change, and it's less than a quart low.
Oh, then ignore it.
So?
Ignore it. Yeah. Absolutely ignore it.
I wouldn't worry about it. Just make sure that you don't forget to change the oil, and you ought to check it once in a while.
Okay.
Between oil changes, because the oil leak could get worse, and then it could be down 2 quarts when you change it, and that wouldn't be good.
All right.
The engine doesn't like to be 2 quarts down.
Okay.
So that's it. That was the whole thing?
That's it. But I called to tell you that my husband and I listen to you every week.
Yeah?
Boy. Well.
Well, you can buy some tapes and listen to them all the time. We have tapes for sale.
You
tapes,
do?
CDs. Yeah, we got everything. Yeah.
Can
sure.
we interest you in the the October special?
The Car Talk Entertainment, complete entertainment package.
I never know when you guys are telling
the truth. How about the Tape a Month Club? That's it. Why don't we start a Tape of the Month Club?
He already belongs to that Book of the Month Club.
The tape is very passive. You stick it in, you listen. You don't. We don't even care if you listen, as long as you buy it.
Now, we just haven't used modern marketing techniques. That's why we're a couple of bozos
driving
50-year-old cars.
An expert in marketing. Do we know anybody that knows anything about marketing?
Not a soul.
I didn't think so. See you, Kathy.
Thanks for calling, Kathy. Bye-bye.
Keep checking that oil.
Okay.
Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, Tom and Ray. This is Roger from Brooklyn.
So how's everything in Brooklyn, Rog?
It's pretty warm out here. I get a feeling it's warm where you are, too.
It's wonderful, isn't
it? It's about 100 in the studio. We're dying, so make it quick.
Let me give you this problem quick.
Yeah.
Got an 81 Toyota Celica with a 22R engine.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
The car starts great, runs great for 1 minute. And then there's no high idle. It suddenly goes down to about 200 RPMs. It'll stall if I don't keep my foot on the gas. Once it warms up, it's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if this is a factor, but I can cure it by putting the air conditioner on, which bumps it up. Yep. The RPM's about 200 higher.
And it doesn't stall.
Doesn't stall.
When you first started, it does fast idle for...
No, it does not fast idle at all.
At all.
Right.
Well, no, let Roger say it.
I listened to him. If you listen to him when they start the first time, you don't have to say, let Roger say it again. I listened to him the first time he said it.
I think you're wrong, knucklehead. Roger, what does it do?
Starts perfectly. It runs perfectly for 1 minute.
Uh-huh.
And then it just goes down to about 200, 100. Really rough.
Okay, and then you turn the air conditioner on, and that fixes it. If you were to turn the air conditioner off...
Yeah, it'll go back down to 200.
Oh.
Once it's warmed up.
It's completely.
It's fine. Yeah.
Once it's completely warmed up, it's okay.
Yes.
Okay, well, there are two possibilities.
No, there's only one.
Well, if you're stupid, there's only one.
So if you combine the two, it'll be one.
The obvious possibility, the obvious thing that my brother's thinking of is that it's coming off the choke too fast. And maybe the fast idle isn't adjusted correctly. So that
or it's not choking at all.
It must be choking because it starts and it runs perfectly. And then as the choke begins to open, the bottom falls out, so to speak. So it's possible that the fast idle screw is not turned in far enough. However, I suspect it's something different because of my vast knowledge of Toyotas.
Or
let me tell you something about the 81.
Yes,
I don't
please.
Think you can adjust the carburetor.
Oh, sure you can.
You can adjust anything, man. You got a big enough screwdriver, you can adjust the world.
You cannot adjust the mixture easily because it is sealed.
But you can adjust the idle speed.
You can adjust the curb idle speed. You can adjust which is the idle speed the speed that it idles at when the engine is fully warmed. You can adjust also the boost idle speed, which is the speed it attains when you've turned on the air conditioner, and you can also adjust the cold idle speed, which is the screw that hits the fast idle cam, so you can determine how fast it runs when the choke is fully closed, partially closed, and less closed.
More partially closed. Right.
More partially closed. So that those adjustments you can do. You can also adjust the mixture, which is not necessary in this case. But I was going to say, what I think is wrong with it is something called the AAP diaphragm.
AAP.
Auxiliary Accelerator Pump Diaphragm. May have a small hole in it, and what happens when it has a small hole in it, it allows gasoline, when the engine is in the warm-up phase, to get sucked into one of the legs of the manifold, and it will cause the engine to run very rough and very slow. And then when the engine warms up, that vacuum is shut off to that diaphragm, and even though it's leaking, it is not contaminating the mixture with too much gas on that. In fact, it affects number one cylinder.
Did this happen all of a sudden?
Of course.
Yes, it did. Yes.
One day it was great, and the next day it wasn't.
I don't recall it being a sort of a slow process.
Yeah.
I think it happened auto.
Well, in that
in which case, it's unlikely that a screw is unadjusted or misadjusted.
Well, it could have fallen out.
Uh-huh.
Screws do fall out, or it might have been stolen. There was a rash.
He lives in Brooklyn, you know. Anything could happen.
There was a rash of fast idle screw thefts in Brooklyn. But in any event, I suspect it is this diaphragm. So you can have your mechanic, if he can find the diaphragm.
Now, would that be inside the carburetor?
No, it's outside the carburetor. There are three little screws that hold it on and a vacuum hose, and it's on the front of the carburetor. He can pinch off, or she, your mechanic can pinch off the hose when the engine is cold and see if it doesn't correct the problem.
If it does, then that's it.
Then you need a new diaphragm. But you'll have to leave the car overnight.
I love it. Yes, I got you.
You got it?
Guys, thanks so much.
Good luck.
That'll do it.
See you next time.
See you, Roger.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This
Hi.
Is Susan down in Miami. We listen to you on WLRN, and I have kind of a unique one for you.
Okay.
My husband and I have a 1960 Austin Healey Bug Eye Sprite.
Yeah.
And it needs to be put away for some long-term storage, and I wanted to get some tips on how to accomplish all this.
How long is long?
About 3 years.
3 years?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he took a job in the Persian Gulf?
Sort of.
Yeah.
Change of duty.
Change of military.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, there are two schools of thought here.
Okay.
My brothers and the rest of the civilized world.
No, wait a minute. Wait.
It's true. Your theory on this is... leave it parked somewhere, and you come back, buy a new battery, put it in, start it up, and
no,
drive
where
away.
Where are you going, Susan, that you couldn't take the car?
Okay, we're going to New Orleans, and the thing is we have three other cars, so something's got to give.
Yeah, you got a lot of cars.
Yeah.
Why are you delving into Susan's personal life? It's none of your damn business. She asked a technical question, which should have a purely objective answer.
No. You have to realize when you don't have a good technical answer, then you've got to kind of
fake it.
Fake around. You change the question.
Yeah.
Always change the question. If you can change the question.
Yeah,
I learned
true.
That from Ronald Reagan. Are you kidding? You think I invented that?
No, that is true.
You're going to leave a store for 3 years, huh?
3 years.
Yeah, it looks like it.
That's a long time.
You know, I have recently developed a new theory about this. And the genesis of this new theory was that what they do with boats. You see how they store boats? That used to be...
Yes, in fact, I happen to know the inventor of the device that makes that possible. The great Mitko. He's also a magician. they shrink wrap boats, right?
Exactly.
That's
they
true.
Shrink
That's
wrap
true.
Them.
Just like when you go into the supermarket and you buy shrink wrapped peas, you can now shrink wrap an entire yacht. We have to pay attention
right.
to this because when we do our boats, you know, this winter.
Well, they used to have the older version of this was Cosmoline. That's what they used to use back.
Right.
You know, when you got those Jeeps when you were in high school, the $50 Army surplus Jeeps.
Well, there's some question about this, actually. This is an interesting idea, because what they do, actually, with the boats is they cover the entire boat, get this, with a gigantic piece of plastic, and then there is a heat wand, which you use at the end to sort of seal.
No, Susan, you're laughing, but this is serious.
This is the truth.
This is a yacht haven. I've seen these.
To my knowledge, I don't know that anyone has ever done this with a car.
It's an interesting idea.
Well, what's curious about it is the thing you're trying to do when you store the car, the basic issue is keep moisture out.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to make very sure that you don't seal in all the moisture.
Right.
That's why you must vacuum seal it.
You have to vacuum pack your car.
Yeah, and this isn't good enough. What they do with the boats is not good enough.
Vacuum pack, huh?
Right.
You want
a Ziploc baggie.
No. If you could, you could take the whole car, wrap it in plastic, and then hook up your vacuum cleaner so it's sucking air from underneath the bag.
Mm-hmm.
And when it looks like it's all sucked down around the car, shrinked, right? Honey, I shrinked the kids. I shrunk the car.
Shrunk.
Then you seal it up, and that would do it.
Okay. Mm. What about right. fluid?
Now, you want
tire?
The theory of the rest of the world, Susan?
Yeah.
That's my brother's wacko theory.
And I think...
Now everybody else.
Susan, when you see the first car... shrink wrapped.
I will think of you.
You'll think of me and you'll say, I could have been in on this big money maker. But
no, It actually is a good idea.
It is an idea for someone with an entrepreneurial spirit. If it isn't you, it's not going to be me either because I have no time for this. But someone out there listening is going to make $5 million on this. Now, my brother will give you the other stupid idea, which everyone else is doing. Go ahead.
No, I mean, the conventional wisdom is that you drain out fluids.
Mm-hmm.
I don't particularly subscribe to the drain out fluids theory. I think you should just cover up all the openings where moisture can get in.
Mm-hmm.
I would also take the battery out, obviously, and drain the antifreeze.
Oh, okay.
I don't know that I would drain the oil. I don't really know. I mean,
Susan,
I don't know what the purpose is of draining
just
the oil.
Just park it.
What do I tell you? Just park it someplace.
Here's what you do. You run it until it runs out of gas. And then you put in a can of this stuff called Stabil.
Stabil?
Stabil.
And then you run it until it runs out of gas.
Right.
And then you take off the spark plugs, you throw a squirt of oil in every cylinder, good squirt, you crank the engine over, throw the plugs back in, you cover up the tailpipe and the air intake, and you don't do anything else to it.
Right.
And that will be fine.
Sounds good.
This baby will start right up.
I hope so.
Hey, good luck in New Orleans.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, Tommy, think hard. Do you remember last week's puzzler?
I don't remember no stinking puzzler.
That's right. There was no puzzler last week. The puzzler is on summer hiatus. It's out in the Hamptons getting a laser face peel.
How are we going to kill all that time in the second half of the show?
Stay tuned and I'll show you how a real pro does it. We'll be back in just a minute.
Well, I'm a man of the road and a highway. Is my home. Coast to coast, there ain't a route that I ain't drove. Well, I'm going to Kansas City, headed up by 35. Then I'm off to Minnesota, that's one hell of a drive. Well, I'm a man of the road, and the highway is my home.
And even those stone-carved garden Buddhas cover their ears whenever they hear us say it. This is NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the American Jewish World Service, working together for more than 30 years to build a more just and equitable world. Learn more at ajws.org. Support for this podcast and the following message come from Kay Buxbaum in support of the David Gilkey and Zabiula Tamana Memorial Fund, established to strengthen NPR's commitment to training and protecting journalists in high-risk environments.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/cartalk.
Good question.
That's a really good question.
It's a great question.
This is free therapy.
Thank you for asking me that.
God, that's such a good question.
That's an interesting question.
But what Fresh Air interviews are really about are the interesting answers. Listen and subscribe to Fresh Air from WHYY and NPR.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and not the answer to last week's puzzler. We'll remind you, puzzler addicts, that we post a puzzler a week all summer long on our website, cartalk.com. So if you're really bored, you've got nothing to do, or the boss is away, and you can do it furtively, go there and loiter. For the rest of you, the puzzler is on summer vacation, and we'll be back sometime in September.
The puzzler is on vacation. Let me get this right now. But we're here.
Yeah.
So we can, like, just go right on misinforming the American public about cars, right?
Absolutely. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Karen Beaver calling from Yuma Pine, Oregon.
Hi, Karen.
I have a problem.
Yuma Pine, Oregon.
Yeah. Well,
okay.
That's the smallest of my problems. My major problem is I have a 1978 Ford F-250 pickup truck.
Whoa.
It's a camper special. And it's a automatic transmission
mm-hmm.
with the extended cab and all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem I'm having with this is that it seems really gutless. And I'm trying to pull a horse trailer that's 17 feet long. It's like a three-horse trailer. And when I get three horses in there, I can barely make it up a hill. I'm getting passed by semis and old grannies and motorhomes and everything. It's really embarrassing.
Well, what do you expect with a three-horse engine?
Well, I don't know. I should think that a three-quarter ton pickup would be powerful enough to pull a horse trailer. And it's got a huge engine in it. It's got like a 460. It's as big as my... bigger than my washing machine, I think.
There's no question that it should have enough power to pull three lousy horses. What does a horse weigh? 1,000 pounds? 1,200 pounds?
Well, 1,200. My horse weighs more than that, but he's an unusual one. But normally they only weigh around there.
But he's as fat as a horse.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're a mother-in-law.
No, horse mothers-in-law.
Don't go there. It should pull it.
Do you feel that the engine speeds up but the truck doesn't? Can you hear that happening, that you step in the gas to make it go?
No, not really.
How long you had this truck?
3 years.
Ah. Who had it before that?
I bought it from a fellow in Portland, Oregon, and he had done a bunch of work on it. He had the transmission overhauled and put in a new carburetor.
How many miles on it?
When I first bought this truck, the fellow told me that it had had the engine rebuilt at 140,000, and now it's getting ready to turn over again, so I'm not sure exactly how many miles are on it.
Well, if you're lucky, it's something as simple as incorrect timing, if you're lucky. If, on the other hand, the timing is correct, there are other reasons why it might have low power. You could have a restricted exhaust system. There could be the dead animals in the exhaust system that are preventing the exhaust from escaping. That would diminish the power considerably.
Well, wouldn't that stink?
Not if they've been dead a long time.
Oh.
And plus, the stink is behind you. You don't smell it. The horses are killing the horses.
Oh, that would be horrible.
Well, I mean, I don't know.
And the worst thing is you could need an engine rebuilt.
Yeah, I mean, because you may have 400,000 on this thing, and you might have no compression at this point.
And you haven't brought it anywhere to have someone look at it?
Well, I do finally now have a mechanic that I think is really reputable and everything, so I've had him hook up my trailer brakes and wiring and stuff, but I haven't had him do any engine work.
When this guy drives it, whoever this guy is that hooked up your lights, he'll know in 1 minute what's wrong with it.
Yeah, I just thought maybe I have a truck that's too big for my brain or something like
that. No. This thing should fly. When you step on that gas pedal...
Like my neck should snap.
Your neck should snap.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it doesn't.
Doesn't.
No, so there's something wrong. And if you're lucky, it's just the timing, or maybe the timing chain is jumped or some such thing, or maybe you have a restricted exhaust. Suggest all these things to him if he can't figure it out. But give him a chance to drive it, and he'll say, I know what it is.
Good.
There you go.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Right. Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Kevin.
Hi, Kevin.
I'm from St. Louis.
St. Louis.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's happening?
Here's the story.
Yeah.
I have a Nissan Sentra SER.
Uh-huh.
About 1,000 miles ago, I developed a small oil leak around the valve cover gasket.
Okay.
Took it into the dealer. Dealer replaced it under warranty. No problem. Well, about 1,000 miles later, now, not only is the leak back, the oil leak, it's a teensy oil leak, no big deal, but they're replacing it again. But also, in the last 1,000 miles, I have had this noticeable air leak of some kind, which I only notice the car redlines at 7,500, and I only notice it from 2,000 to 6,000.
What do you mean, air leak?
It's a whooshing sound. It's constant.
Like that?
Loud.
What is that noise?
Pardon me?
What is that noise? That's your engine?
No, that's the blower. I work at a car wash.
Oh, I thought you had taped the sound. That's great.
No.
But does it resemble that sound?
No, not quite that loud.
So you can get this.
Less,
you can get this noise if you just sit there and rev it up to 2,000 or more.
Yes, when I'm driving, whether I'm not in gear, doesn't matter. If the engine's between 2,000 and 6,000. There's a...
And you don't have to be moving.
No.
Oh, that's good.
The other thing is that I've always been told that if you put a piece of cardboard over your tailpipe and the tailpipe blows the cardboard out, you're fine. If it sucks it back in, you've got potential problems.
Well, it's not.
whoa here. Wait.
If it's not at 2,000 to 6,000, it's not exactly.
Is this guy getting the hot wax or not?
Yes, he is.
He is.
And more importantly, does that stuff work?
Yes, it does.
It does,
it
huh?
It actually does.
Okay, I've always wanted to know that, and no one's ever given me the straight answer because I've always asked people that worked at. Oh, never mind. Okay, so anyway, so you covered up the tailpipe with a 3x5 card, and what happened?
Between 2 and 6,000, it doesn't exactly pull the card back to the tailpipe, but it doesn't blow out like it does before and after that range.
Well, my guess is that what you hear is an exhaust leak.
Okay.
Okay, and the simpler test is to take your hand with a substantial rag over it and plug up the tailpipe.
Big, heavy rag, because it's going to burn.
Yeah, with asbestos fibers worn into it.
Yeah.
But you're only going to do it for a few seconds.
Right.
And you're going to have an assistant actually hold the rag on the tailpipe. You're going to be up front listening for the noise, and you're going to hear an exhaust leak. And I suspect it's unrelated. It's probably unrelated to the work they did, although it's possible.
Very unlikely.
It's not unlikely entirely because there is some exhaust plumbing that works some of the emission control stuff under the hood. So it's possible they left a hose off.
That actually, what the service consultant at the dealer said when I first called, she said, "Oh, it just sounds like a vacuum hose was knocked slightly off."
I don't think so. A vacuum hose would make the thing run poorly at idle in all likelihood.
And you haven't noticed any degradation of performance, is that right?
Not really.
On top of which, this didn't happen until 1,000 miles after they had fixed the oil leak. Is that
well,
right?
Well, it's now that it's really beginning to be noticeable.
Yeah.
So it has gotten worse and worse and worse.
Yes.
So if they had knocked a hose off, chances are it wouldn't have changed over a period of weeks.
Right.
The hose would have been off. It would have been off.
Right.
My guess is that you have an exhaust leak somewhere up front, and that's why you're going to do that test. You're going to plug up the tailpipe or have your friend plug it up, and you're going to be in front with the hood open listening for the escaping exhaust, and you're going to find it in 2 seconds.
Okay.
And when you find it, you're going to realize that they probably didn't do it. So
okay.
Do your shoes get wet?
Yes, they do. That's why I wear combat.
Wait. Are you wearing a bikini?
No, I'm not.
Okay. All right, Kevin.
But check for an exhaust leak.
I think this is easy.
And if it looks like they knocked something off, go and blame them anyway. I mean, what if you get to lose?
Fair enough.
Good luck.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
See you, Kevin.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Car wash.
Bikini car wash.
Hot wax. 1-8 something about the. Never mind.
How can they claim, by the way?
About the hot wax.
Hot wax will not get all over your windshield. It will not cloud up anything because it.
Well, the reason that it doesn't adhere to the glass
oxide fish.
Is the coating, the plastic coating on the outside.
On the outside of the windshield.
The windshield. Right. Right. Or there is no such thing as hot wax.
I mean, how would you ever know? I mean, yeah, the guy says an extra $2 and we'll give you hot wax.
Might
you won't know we did it, but the little light will come on when you're sitting in the car. You get to the area where it says hot wax and the light flashes and says hot wax on. Nothing's going
on. You do see a slight yellowing of the liquid that is pouring on your car.
Connected to the
they're
men's
flushing
room.
That's what I figured. Some men's rooms, the urinals flush all at the same time.
All at the same time?
I think that must be
it. And when they flush, the light comes on. It says hot wax.
Hello, you're on Car Talk. It was just a thought. It's probably wrong. It probably is wrong.
It probably is wrong.
Yeah, it's just a
thought. And it wasn't much of a thought, as a matter of fact.
Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Heather from Arcata, California.
Heather.
Uh-huh. H-E-A-T-H-E-R.
Arcata.
Uh-huh.
Where is Arcata?
Arcata's in Humboldt County, which is about 5 hours north of San Francisco.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I have an 84 Volvo diesel wagon that I love.
God. Really?
And I guess it was a few months ago I took it to the mechanic because my glove compartment was stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And the mechanic that I took it to was named, well, I won't tell you his name, but he owns a very high-end German motors place in town, and I was told it was the only place to bring a diesel Volvo back.
Georg?
Georg?
Close.
Sandor?
I like Hans.
Oh, that's very close.
Hans.
Helmut.
That's it.
Helmut.
How
is good.
You know?
Of course.
Helmut.
I only know four German names, and you just exhausted them all.
Helmut. Yeah.
Well, I hope he's not listening.
Okay.
Anyway, so Helmut fixed a lot of things in my car. I took it in. I said, Helmut, my glove compartment's stuck. And 3 weeks later, and $3,000 later, I got my car back.
For the glove compartment?
Well, he did a lot more. And one of the things he did was a fuel injection system. Pretty much, he replaced the whole system, I think. And two or three weeks later, I was driving up to Oregon to go to a wedding in Seattle, and we stopped at Timberline Lodge, which is on Mount Hood.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
My boyfriend Rick and I are driving up the hill, and at exactly 4,500 feet, the car dies, just completely stalls. And I know it was 4,500 feet because I had a topographical map in front of me because we were planning on going to Mount Hood.
Yeah.
So we didn't understand what was going on. We had to call a tow truck and get it towed back to Portland, which was $150.
Ooh.
We get back to Portland, and as soon as the car gets off the tow truck, it just starts up. No problem. And for a living, I lead backpacking trips. So I drive up to high elevations pretty often in the summertime.
And you have done that with this car?
Many, many times, previous to having it worked on. And a few weeks later, I left to lead a backpacking trip, and I was about a day behind the group, meaning the rest of the group was already on the trail. So I was rushing as fast as I could, and I was way up on this trail access road. And at exactly 4,500 feet, the car stops again and dies.
Ooh.
Rick, meanwhile, is at a Joan Baez concert and couldn't help. So the next day, we get in his truck and we go back out to get the car. We roll it about 500 feet down the hill.
And it starts right up.
And it starts right up. So I took it back to the mechanic, and he still can't find anything wrong with it. And I am convinced it's an elevation problem. Everybody tells me I'm crazy, but I know in my heart.
Oh, no, they are wrong.
I'm not laughing.
No, in fact, we're crying with you.
We're not laughing, Heather.
So what is it?
Oh, we don't know what it is, but we do know it is related to elevation.
We know we agree with you. We just
do you?
Don't know why.
What would it be?
I mean, my first suspicion is, I think you alluded to the fact that Helmut rebuilt the fuel injector pump.
He did.
That is the pump which not only sucks the fuel out of the tank, but pumps it to the injectors at like 2,000 PSI.
Okay.
Either he did something wrong.
Yeah, we're trying to figure out what that is.
Or there's a break in the fuel line someplace that's allowing the thing to start sucking air.
But if it's something that Helmut did, okay, here's the moral part of the question.
Yeah.
If it's something that Helmut did, then how do I justify, do I hold him responsible for the money that I spent?
Of course.
All the way in Portland.
You hold him responsible for everything.
So he's completely responsible.
Totally responsible.
For all of those expenses, including the day of work that Rick had to take off.
Including the day of work, of course.
Oh, you can single-handedly be responsible for bankrupting
this guy. And don't forget, three meals a day.
Hotel lodging. Right,
everything.
Well, he's a very nice man. I'm certain that he'll comply.
So
and the question I have to ask, why did he rebuild the fuel injector pump in the first place?
I don't know.
When you went in to have the glove box opened.
Well, apparently.
What was wrong with the car?
Please open my glove box. The guy charges you $3,000 by putting in a whole new fuel system.
Well, actually, though, what happened was I pulled in with a broken glove compartment to another mechanic, and the other mechanic crawled, thought that he smelled diesel, and he starts screaming and running for the phone and says, it's leaking diesel, and the only one that can take this is Helmut. Like, Helmut was some sort of demigod.
Oh.
So that's why I took it to Helmut.
Helmut is the diesel guy.
Well, I don't know how, I on the spot like this, it's very hard to come up with an answer unless we know the question in advance. So it's something that we've seen. And we don't know the questions in advance, unfortunately.
Okay.
And it's something I haven't seen. However, my intuition tells me that the atmospheric pressure is absolutely related to it, number one. And number two, you have a leaky fuel line someplace.
Okay.
If that test is negative,
uh-huh,
then it's going to be he did a faulty job on the injector pump.
Okay. And then he's responsible for the hotel and dinner in Portland.
Hotel, dinner,
and private school for your kids whenever that should arise.
The whole thing, yeah.
No, you're not going to get him to be responsible for anything. At best, he's going to be responsible for fixing what he did wrong,
right,
but he's not responsible for all the other stuff.
But if you can simply get him to admit that he did anything wrong, that would be a tremendous victory on your part.
Right, of course.
And hope that Helmut will deign to look at you again. I mean, it may be that he doesn't see people more than
I've
once.
I probably ate my chances of that ever happening again, assuming that he or someone he knows is listening to this show.
Well, it was your fault for using his real name.
We were
I said helmet. You could have said
name.
No.
You guessed his real name. I never said his name.
We were going to stick with Hans.
Hans was good. Sandor was good.
Sandor.
Now, as far as Volvo diesels are concerned, are they good cars? I mean, can I count on it putting a lot of miles on it?
Oh, yeah, these are great.
Sure.
Especially at high altitudes.
Yeah, they use these in airplanes.
Good luck, Heather. You may be on Stump the Chumps. Call us back.
Great. Thank you so much.
And if Helmut needs any help, tell him to call us.
I will.
See ya.
Bye, Heather.
Okay, look, we have to pause right now and take a break.
Oh, station identification?
No, station underwritification. We'll be right back in a minute. I got my car.
And even though Hannibal Lecter pops a Zantac whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the American Jewish World Service, working together for more than 30 years to build a more just and equitable world. Learn more at ajws.org.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. Ready for a new ride but not sure where to start? Try the tool designed to make car shopping and financing easier. With Capital One Auto Navigator, you can find a car and get pre-qualified instantly. Then see your real rate and monthly payment without impacting your credit score. It's so simple you might feel like you're taking the easy way out. That's because you are. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/AutoNavigator. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the scientific dining.
There I was, reading the Annals of Improbable Research, and here on page 16 is scientific dining, reviews of Research Institute cafeterias. I mean, what kind of wackos are these people? I mean, and the reason it's of interest here is because it's quasi-automotive, because they're doing a review of the General Motors Research and Development Center cafeteria.
Really?
In Warren, Michigan. And the cafeteria at the GM Research and Development Center is very clean. Sited majestically in the basement, just steps from the base of a gleaming Aero-Saarinen-designed spiral staircase that attracts well-groomed and occasionally faithful lunch crowd of hungry researchers. And then it goes on. Every table features a bouquet of artificial flowers anchored to an attractive woven basket. And we asked people, what is there about this cafeteria that distinguishes it from other research lab cafeterias? A focus group of 5 GM staff research scientists answered this question with silence. Eventually, one scientist offered the notion that it's subterranean. What was this? While standing in the serving queue, we smell something burning, perhaps a featured entree. He and his colleague recommended the plentiful selection of breads and rolls, which are renowned for their longevity. And the part of Dr. Linda Means, one of 2 linguists on GM's research staff. GM has linguists.
Yes.
Is a member of the cafeteria committee. She recently persuaded...
What an honor.
She recently persuaded the manager to augment his wide range of vegetarian dishes, which previously had been limited to French fries.
And succotash.
Okay, and then they give a scale. The cafeteria's regular diners give it a consistent 1. The scale goes from I to pi. Of course, it's a research lab. And they rated it on the basis of quality, where it got a rating of 1, trendiness, where it got a rating of 1, and bearded men, which is the number of photos or drawings of bearded men displayed on the walls of the cafeteria, where it got a 0.6. All in all, we found that your visit to the GM Research and Development Center, if you have to have lunch, and if you can't find your way out of the basement, the cafeteria is a fine place to dine. Who wrote this? Stephen Drew. Now, what does Stephen Drew do when he's not doing this? He's locked up somewhere. I don't know who he is.
Definitely locked up. Hey, look, this is normally the time where we give you the new weekly puzzler, but there is no new puzzler this week because our dear puzzler is on summer vacation. Where is it? San Diego?
No.
Chicago?
No.
Atlantic City?
Possibly.
Like the rest of us, the puzzler needs a little time every year to get refreshed, renewed, and with any luck, a little less crummy. So if you're dying for a puzzler, you can try one of our archival puzzlers, which you can find at cartalk.com. And if you'd like to call us about anything, the number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Dennis from Mexico, Missouri.
Dennis!
How are you?
Mexico, Missouri?
Mexico, Missouri, that's right.
I never knew there was such a place.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there's a Paris and a California and a Nevada. There's Louisiana. There's lots of things.
Wow, that's interesting.
Evidently. Where is Mexico in relation to, like, other landmarks we might know, like...
what landmarks might you know in
St.
Missouri?
Louis.
The Arch?
We would know the Arch.
Springfield. Well,
the Arch would be about it.
The Arch, it's probably 110 miles...
North
by northwest.
Oh, I know.
I saw that movie. Cary Grant, Eva Marie Saint.
Yeah,
what
great
a movie. Anyway, what's going on, Dennis?
Well, I've got a Toyota Corolla.
Uh-huh.
I've had it since it got driven off the trailer.
Excellent.
And it's got 220,000 miles on it. And about 3 months ago, it started jumping out of fifth gear. So I got into a habit of when I was going into a turn, I'd always reach down and hold the gear shift, and then as I accelerated, it would stay in.
Yeah.
But now, it pops out whenever it wants.
Yeah.
So I've temporarily fixed the problem.
With a rope.
With a bungee cord.
But exactly what I was going to suggest. Now, the people take various approaches to where they attach the other end of that bungee cord.
Right.
Where have you put yours?
Well, actually,
is it in the glove compartment?
No.
Excellent.
It's under the dash. Yes.
Under the dash is the favored location.
But I'm not sure exactly where because the guy I drive to work with, he always hooks it up under there on his side. So
you don't have any problems. What did you call us for? Everything's fine.
Well, I saw my mechanic, and he said, it sounds like you have a worn fifth gear cluster.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, can I run with this bungee cord to help my fifth gear cluster for another 200,000 miles?
You could drive from Mexico to Paris.
No.
With this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Both of which are in Missouri.
Yeah, Mexico to Paris is only about 30 miles, so.
I mean, do you really need fifth gear?
Well, that's what I'm getting at.
I do need fifth gear because I'm up to 70, 75 on the way to work every day.
Well, how long are you driving at that speed? Most of the 30 miles?
Most of the 30 miles.
Well, I mean, eventually, there's no bungee cord in the world that will keep this thing in fifth gear.
Okay.
And who knows? It may start popping out of the other gears.
Is this an indication? Because I've never replaced anything on the car, clutch or anything like that.
Yeah, well.
Just the usual wear item.
Well, you must be close to needing a clutch.
I may be.
Here's my recommendation. Try to find a secondhand transaxle.
Okay.
And when you do the clutch, have them throw that thing in. And if you can find one for a few $100.
Oh, okay.
Throw the whole thing in there. Something with low mileage, like 180, 185.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
See you, Dennis.
Thanks for the help.
Good luck.
Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Alita from Queechee, Vermont.
Alita?
Alita.
A-L-I-D-A?
Yep, that's it.
From where,
Queechee, Vermont.
So what's on your mind, Alita?
My boyfriend and I have an 89 Nissan Pathfinder, and we have a problem with it. There's fuel dumping down into the motor oil, and the wrong catalytic has been on it for about a year now, and it's gone through about 5 mufflers. But the truck's not burning any oil, but it is running rich.
I bet it is.
Yeah, so we've had just a ton of problems with it. So a few months ago, we were just sick of this truck, sick of these problems, and we decided we were going to blow the motor.
So, just to see what it was like.
Yeah, exactly. Just to see, you know, just to do it and be done
see,
with
that's
it.
What happens when you live in a place like Queechee, Vermont. I mean, you could have decided to go to a play, but there are no plays in Queechee,
right,
Vermont.
Right, exactly. So,
you have
know,
to make
you
your own fun.
You have to make your own fun. What are we going to do? Let's blow the motor, Mort.
Wait a minute, Alita. You can't be from Vermont if you want it. You must really be from New Hampshire if you decided to do this.
No.
How about your boyfriend?
He's from Vermont, too.
Oh, but I can't believe it.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, he put a block of wood on the gas pedal, and the motor didn't blow.
So your plan was that you would put a brick on the gas pedal and just let it run and run and run and run and run until it destroyed itself.
Well, first we tried to do it by, you know, being really rough with it, four-wheeling.
Slapping it around and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then you decided to put a bullet behind number three piston.
But anyway, none of that worked.
No.
So then after this happened, we had the fuel in the motor oil, and we brought it to the mechanic. He said that he didn't think the fuel was because we had tried to blow the motor.
No.
He thought that it was some other problem. And now he's told us that it's the fuel injectors that need to be replaced because he's saying there's too much fuel going by them, and it's getting onto the pistons and then leaking into the motor oil.
Well, I don't think so.
You don't think so?
What?
No, I mean, it's unlikely that all six injectors are bad.
Well, that's what they're telling us.
Nah, it's bogus.
Well, wait a minute. What do you care what's wrong with it?
Well, we...
You're trying
now,
to kill it.
No. See, now we like the truck because the motor didn't go. So we're like, well, we've got to fix this. We've got to use this.
I mean, we don't really care what's wrong with it either. Obviously, if you have no respect for this Pathfinder, why should we?
No, she has new respect for
yeah.
it.
New respect,
the
yeah.
fact that they tried to kill it.
You couldn't kill it.
You couldn't kill
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
And it came back and
like,
said, I'm hanging in there.
That wouldn't die.
Now we think this is great. Now we want this thing.
I think instead of having six bad injectors, it's more likely you have a bad fuel pressure regulator.
Okay.
Yeah, and the fuel pressure regulator will allow gasoline to get dumped into actually the intake manifold because there's a vacuum hose that connects the regulator to the manifold so that when the thing fails, the thing must run lousy too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you have a pinhole in the diaphragm of the fuel pressure regulator.
Okay.
And the way you're going to find that out is you pull the vacuum hose off and you're going to find that there's gasoline there and there shouldn't be.
Okay.
So ask the guy to check that before he goes throwing. Those injectors are going to be $150
yeah,
bucks a piece.
That's going to run into money. You don't want to go replacing injectors if you don't have to.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't know what to tell you, Alita. I mean, this is what you do for fun in Vermont.
Hey, four-wheeling is awesome.
No, we didn't mean the four-wheeling. The brick on
the
accelerator.
Oh, the motor. Well, no, that was, you know... That was just a one-time thing.
Yeah, I mean, you guys need to do some... Throw a pot or something. Do some... Try a kiln.
Yeah, get cable TV. I mean, there are lots of things you can do. Read a book.
Forget it.
You're having fun. And go for it. Good
okay.
for you.
Thanks, see ya.
Thanks for calling, Alita.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi,
who's this?
This is Daryl.
Daryl, D-A-R-R-E-L-L.
Correct. Absolutely.
No kidding.
Correct.
I wrote D-A-R-Y-L.
Well, that would be incorrect.
Good.
Yeah. I figured that out, big mouth.
Where are you from,
Daryl? You have to tell the whole world about it.
From Nitro, West Virginia.
Where? Nitro?
Nitro.
Like N-I-T-R-O?
Exactly like, as in kaboom.
Boy, I'm batting 1,000 on spelling today, huh?
Nitro.
Hey, I'm telling you.
West Virginia.
You know why? That's coal mining country, and they use nitro to dig those mines or something.
Well, actually, nitro was founded around an ammunition plant.
No kidding.
I wouldn't lie to you about that.
And they named the town after it.
Indeed they did.
Wow.
Right, it's right next to toluene.
And try.
And xylene.
Tri-City area.
The Tri-City area. It used to be Tri-City, now it's one big pile of rubble. Barney.
So what's up, Daryl?
Well, I have a moral question.
Oh.
Moral dilemma. Yeah,
really?
A moral
You're
dilemma.
About to cheat somebody, huh?
No. Well, not exactly, I don't think.
And you want our help, right?
I want your help in resolving which is the correct way to go, yes.
Oh, you've come to the right people.
You absolutely have.
You have certainly come to the right people.
We will give you both avenues, no matter what.
We'll tell you what the right thing is to do, and we'll give you a lot of ideas on why not to do it.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, I was driving to my parents' home in Ohio, and taking the back roads through farmland and strip mine land.
Yeah.
And as I was driving, I was thinking, you know, it'd be nice to get a haircut along in here. But there was no public facility, and it was daylight and kind of open, and the local constabulary kind of frowns on that.
Yes.
And so I kept driving, and it just went from it'd feel nice to, boy, I really need to, hey, this is urgent, to, whoa, this is imminent. And I'm looking at these little tiny trees and thinking, that looks like poison ivy around them, so that isn't a good idea. And about this time, I see a sign that looks like it has two arches.
Yeah.
And I covered one eye because I'm thinking, you know, I might be cross-eyed by this point. But it still had two. It was not an advertisement for St. Louis. So I stopped there, got my hair cut. And here's my moral dilemma.
Yeah.
I've used their facilities, which are, of course, paid for by their corporate profits.
Mm-hmm.
Am I then responsible to go up and help contribute to the corporate profits?
I see.
Well, I mean, this is a small moral dilemma.
How many times have you done this?
Well,
a couple, huh?
Couple, probably, yeah.
I mean, do they have a sign here that says restroom use is for our patrons only?
Well, it actually doesn't.
Well, no. If it did...
Then I'm obligated.
Cover one eye when you go by. No.
If it did, you certainly would be obligated. On the other hand, if they are the only place within 100 miles, this must happen all the time.
Yeah, well, that's...
And so if they didn't want you to be getting a haircut there, then they would probably have the sign.
Okay, I'll buy that.
Yeah, I would. First of all, I wouldn't worry about it unless they catch you and reprimand you. Use the back door approach. I would use the back door approach. More than that, I mean, the reason there are no other rest areas within 50 miles of this place is they want you to stop there.
Because they
figure that some people are going to sneak in the back like you do and use the facilities and jump in the car and take off. But the vast majority of people are going to feel not an obligation, but some kind of a compunction to actually buy something.
Yeah,
They're going to smell that grease wafting out of those fryolators, and they're going to go in and buy a large fries and a Coke.
You, on the other hand, had no such compunction. I mean, you just blatantly went in, used the facilities, and left and said, ha! How could you have done that anyway? Did you feel a little guilty? Did you, like, sneak out?
Well, I thought about it, and then I thought, you know, Ray Kroc has enough money already.
He's dead anyway. He's got enough now.
He certainly has got enough, right. I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay.
No, I wouldn't. I think if that's the worst of your moral dilemma,
then you're a pretty good guy.
If they say something to me, I'll refer them to you.
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
send a note to Haircut Division, and we'll respond to it quickly.
See you, Daryl.
Thank you much.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye. Well, it's happened again. You've squandered another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Rental Car and Park Ranger Fugitive. Bongo Boy. Banned in Boston, Berman. That's a tale we'll have to tell soon enough. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green and Catherine Frau Blucher-Fenolosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mayor, assisted by Connie Bridgeford. Our engineer is John Cartman-Parati. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the scenic route, bean sprout, brook trout, pig snout, sauerkraut, and Guinness stout, anti-gout, pig out, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Marge Novera. Our staff acupuncturist is O. Howard Hertz. And our shop foreman is Luke Busy. Our student consultant is Norm DePlume. Our dermatologist for teenagers is Don Pickett. Our coordinator of summer visits to the in-laws is Don Juan Go. Our Russian chauffeur is Pikoff and Dropoff. And the head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the schwitzing tourists in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and Don't Drive Like My Brother.
And I've got a suggestion.
Yes.
Don't Drive Like My Brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, download other migraine-inducing episodes, and check out our clothing and best-of collections all over at cartalk.com. Also this week at cartalk.com, we're here to help you clean up your driveway. Got an old car that's seen better days? Well, the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program will tow it away for free and send the proceeds to the NPR station of your choice. Do it now before your local neighborhood watch group labels your car an eyesore and plants geraniums in it. Turn your car into the programs you love. Find out how at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though marathon runners suddenly get cramps in their ears whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.